Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Creative Inclinations with me, David Steele. Creative Inclinations is a one-on-one conversation-based podcast where we talk about art, music, culture, entertainment, and more. Today, we have a special guest on the show, Luke Roundtree. Welcome, Luke.
Hey, David.
How are you? Thanks for coming.
No, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Yeah, we met a few months ago at the local music mixer networking thing that I think was put on by Oklahoma, Make Oklahoma Weirder. Mm-hmm. So it actually worked. We met.
There you go. I know. That's what I was thinking as well. I was like, oh, this I met some people that did you connect with?
Did you meet anyone else there that night you kind of followed up with or anything?
I did. Cooper with Catapult.
Okay. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Actually,
what you're talking about.
Yeah. He just launched, forgive me, but that part of the the music that, you know, gets your music out distributor.
Oh yeah.
And so actually I was it was great because I did actually flip my stuff over from CD Baby to that because I just like having a little bit more local person I see and talk to.
Yeah. If you have questions or anything, you don't have to go to customer service.
Right. Nothing against CD Baby or anything like that. But it is nice to know that
that's
person's
awesome.
Real
and they're there. Yeah. And I'm always all about local everything. I mean I'm always one of my big goals with this channel and anything I do with this is like empowering local entertainers, you know, and just like kind of validating people by, you know, talking about it and treating it like a real, you know, that it is serious and it is like we're not out here just, you know, running around making jokes. I mean, some of us are, but, you know, they're serious about it and I want to turn Oklahoma into an entertainment, you know, hot spot, you know, more like Austin or something. I think we can get there if we all kind of focus and build this stuff up together.
I agree. Between us and Tulsa, we can figure it out.
I mean, there's a ton of bands, music out there for sure. That is the one thing is Oklahoma, I feel like, is a little bit lacking with original music these days. I mean, it's kind of been up and down. I'm sure you've seen too, but I kind of want to jump in because you're a singer songwriter, you play guitar, any other instruments?
I can clunk around on the piano.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah.
Like a lot of guitarists, and you start
it's kind of a good tool to use sometimes if you want to play around with the melodies. I assume.
Yeah.
What's like one of your earliest memories of playing music or wanting to be a musician? I want to take it back to the early days. Yeah.
You know, there was always music in the house for my parents, like a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously those influences, the first groups or singers or, you know, songs you hear obviously make a mark on you.
Right.
But the first time I could remember actually like playing music was around like 6 or 7. My brother had actually got a Sears guitar. Probably about that big from the Sears catalog, you know.
That's awesome.
And had 2 strings on it, and they were rusted over. And
but it was
he
something.
Didn't play it much, and it was it was something. Yeah. And then I did, you know, the typical piano lessons that everybody gets drudged
kinda
through.
Start to your parents recognize, okay, you want to play music, so they put you in some kind of lesson.
Right. And I always got in trouble from my teacher. She was a great teacher, but I always played by ear. And I would not read my music.
Yeah.
So she would always say, quit playing by ear. I didn't really understand what that meant at the time.
Yeah, you're like, what? Right. That's kind of a good talent. I mean, I've played by ear. I've never been able to read music. I don't know, you know, like what those lines mean and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I learned from the early days on the internet whenever there were tabs. Tabs were a thing. It's like I would just look up tabs for a popular song that I liked. And that's how I taught myself to play.
Yeah. Yeah, and, same here. My uncle gave me later on, 12, 13, when you've actually can put some time in it. He let me borrow his acoustic, and he wrote down. I remember he wrote out how to form a G, how to form a D.
Okay.
Like just wrote out chords.
Just by like saying,
here's the lines, and then there's a dot on
the
line.
Put your finger,
exactly. And he said, learn those chords. And I think that's kind of the test of like, do you really want to learn something, or you just like want to play a song you heard and then you're done with it, right? So we had, you know, that was around that age is when I first started to learn songs like you just said. Mm-hmm. That was like the, you know, you'd get on the dial-up internet and for the 30, 45 minutes you had until somebody had to, you know, make a phone call, you'd look for gold.
I had tons of printouts. So.
Stuff. And when you find them, it was like these treasures.
Yep.
Because now I know how to play this song. Right. That, you know, I've been listening on VH1 or MTV or the radio or something.
And then come to find out, too, it's like half that stuff wasn't even, I mean, it works. If it sounds the right, it's the same, but it's like it could be altered, you know, and it's like, so that was something that, you know, I learned, and that it's like you'd have to look up multiples to really get a bigger, better picture of what was really going on, especially if you're trying to play some more complex stuff, I think.
Oh yeah. And then they had those tab books and chord books where, you know, I'd go to Best Buy or something like
Guitar
that.
Guitar Center, I think, when we were looking at them there all the time.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've never looked into it, but when I was a kid, like what you were saying, I felt like this is exactly what they play. And like the guys in the studio told the publisher, this is what I'm playing.
Yeah,
and then later on, as I've looked at them, as I've gotten older, like, this is just somebody listening to it by ear. And
just trying to figure it out. But there's never a right or wrong way to play stuff, I think. And now, when I try to play covers now, or I don't. I'm not a cover person. I don't know. Do you play a lot of covers?
You know, I don't.
Or have you? Yeah, in the past.
I don't. I like playing them, but I don't necessarily. I'm at the point where right now I've got to just play what I've got, but I do. I mean, like anybody, you just enjoy the music. But honestly, learning my own songs and keeping those in my head is enough.
Yeah, and that's I think that's the more interesting challenge to me. But I have kind of learned some more and more covers here and there, and it's like when I do play them, I usually will just. I won't really look at tabs, or I might just to get kind of a certain part that, and kind of figure it instead of trying to figure it out by ear, just jump ahead, you know,
right.
soon as I learn it, how it should be, it changes from there because I'm going to play it how I want to play it after that. It's not going to be what that was on the recording anyways, just cause I know the instrument well enough to, I can add or take away things or do whatever you know,
and you know how you play.
Make it original.
What for me it's like, how can I easily play this?
Because I imagine with singing too, you're gonna sing it differently, you know.
You hope so.
You know
starting out you do mimic a lot, but I think you learn that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know I did. I know one time when, you know, you're talking about when did I start writing songs, I can remember I wrote a song and it was a blatant just like ripoff of another song. And I played it for one of my really good friends and he was like, it kind of sounds like this. He was trying to be real gentle because, you know, he didn't want to hurt my feelings or anything, but he's like, it kind of sounds a little bit like this song. And I can remember being like, yeah, it does. But you know, looking back, I definitely see how I learned songwriting, or I learned how to sing, or learned, you know, how to put lyrics together, you know, or just anything. You're just consuming that and absorbing all that stuff all the time. So that's actually what I do love about cover. Like if I do learn someone else's song, it's also almost kind of getting into somebody else's way of doing something.
Yeah.
And learning, well, why did they do it that way? Or how did they hear that from that, where I wouldn't naturally hear that? So to me, it just kind of opens up your well a little bit.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I think about music all the time and writing original stuff. I'm not a songwriter per se. It's like I'm a bass player. I love being that kind of support role of that. You know, I need somebody like you to write and, you know, come up with the chord progressions and stuff. But anyway, so I've always thought about that. And I do think that, and especially the dynamics of a group, a band, you know, it's like you have a bass player and a drummer and then maybe one or two guitar players, and every one of you has a different idea of music, you know, just in what you like and what you don't like. So mixing that stuff, I think, is the beauty of, you know, groups. But certainly I think that those early influences is what builds that style. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you don't know what you can even sound like until you hear someone else do something, you know.
Right.
For sure. So yeah, some of your, so what were those early influences you mentioned there?
Yeah.
Maybe current influences too.
Yeah. A lot of them are still the same. Yeah. And some of those earlier influences, you know, I joke sometimes, but my, my mom, she was a huge Amy Grant fan. Mm-hmm. So this was like 89, 90 when like mm-hmm. she was becoming a pop star.
Yeah.
The Baby Baby, that's the song. And I can remember hearing that in the car. You know, as a 5 or 6 year old. And, mm-hmm. and so that kind of the bubblegum pop yeah. is there. The biggest influence influences I had that were huge and they stay with me today actually came from my dad and then my best friend's dad. Actually, mm-hmm. the guy I was just talking about who I yeah. played the song. His dad is like one of those people that just listens to music for all decades and dives deep into mm-hmm. it. So I heard a lot of 50s and 60s, 50s, you know, doo-wop yeah. type groups mm-hmm. and obviously like Elvis and people like that and Buddy Holly. But mm-hmm. And then there was 60s rock and roll yeah. and folk rock that really yeah. Turned me on to a lot of things, you know, like the Byrds and Dylan and all the, you know, the names that everybody mm-hmm. lists, but
that was who's popular. So yeah, I mean, you're gonna hear that for anything.
Exactly. And hearing that at such a young age was huge. Mm-hmm. And then my dad was a huge 70s yeah. rock guy and loved all those groups. And so I would just listen and listen and listen and just, I don't know, from an early age, I just loved sitting and listening to music, whether it was just hanging out in my room, playing Nintendo, mm-hmm. whatever it was.
There's always music.
It was there, yeah. and then I felt like, you know, mid-90s is when I became a teenager.
Yeah.
And that's when I found my music, mm-hmm. per se. You know, you kind of have your yeah. your dad's music.
There is something about, I think, when you're a teenager, that that's the true stuff that's going to stick with you. For me, it was the Strokes, that early 2000s indie rock. Like Strokes is one of my favorite bands, and it's like everything that I play, I can hear that in it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just like something about it.
Man, their latest album was so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it 2000 or 2020?
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I think so.
They're going. They won the Grammy.
Because I think that was the one Rick Rubin helped
yes,
with.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah, I was a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. So mine was like mid-90s. Yeah. The Americana groups. Mm-hmm. Like the Counting Crows, mm-hmm. The Wallflowers were huge for me, and then I really got into like English rock.
Oh yeah,
and that was just that. Those groups like Radiohead, Travis, yeah. and Doves, and Oasis, and I know they're big names, mm-hmm. but man, they really influenced me, set a mark. Like, What's the Story, Morning Glory? Mm. I can vividly remember listening to that for yeah. the first time. I can vividly remembering yeah. listening to the Bends for the first time. Yeah. And it they just and although my current sound and things like that are not anywhere mm-hmm. near what that would sound like, but
yeah.
they're the ones that I go back and I have a special place in my heart
yeah.
because they hit you at that time when you're
yeah,
young.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that growing up, I think that's like at the time when you're looking for your identity mm-hmm. very strongly. It's like you're trying to move away from the nest and be your, you know, see what you're capable of in the world. And like that music is like part of it for sure.
Right.
I think whatever it is at that age.
Right. But yeah, like dad may have his Hotel yeah. California, but I have yeah. my Paranoid Android.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
that's something that you said that about your music. Cause I listened to the album. We'll talk more about that here in a bit, but
yeah.
it does. I mean, you're right. It is more of the Americana, that kind of folk rock, but it's, I mean, I can always hear something, like I said, that like I was talking about, with my playing with the Strokes, it's like I can be playing a blues rock song and still have that more melodic stuff in there. And it's just like, but I think that I can kind of pick up on some of that stuff. There's a band called Liquid Girlfriend. That's a local band. Have you heard of them?
Mm-hmm, I haven't.
They're kind of a, I don't know what you would call it. They're very interesting. That's why I think it's almost a little bit experimental, but they have a lot of this like power pop sound that's not what they are, but it's something about it reminds me of like this early 2000s like yeah. Blink-182 or something. It's just a vibe, I don't yeah. know, but I think that your stuff definitely has a vibe of that 90s in there. I
yeah.
think you can kind of tell maybe with the way you do your vocals or something like that, you know, but Yeah, I love it. So yeah, you kind of like, what's like your current favorite genre? Do you listen to a lot of folk stuff?
Yeah, I do.
These days?
I get really obsessive about an artist, mm-hmm. and I'll dive deep and only listen to that.
Yeah.
And get into, just, and it, I guess I'm like, for instance, I listened to that Strokes, their latest album. Yeah. I can't think of what it's called right now.
Yeah,
but,
I don't remember either.
Like that whole album, I just listened to for like just over 2 and months.
Over, yeah.
Just constantly. Mm-hmm. And I do that. And I mean, I'm trying to think who lately I have been listening to. I've been. And you go in phases, right, where you can pick back up on bands. And so the one I've been listening to is The Band.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's the fall. Maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know. But there's something about their music that...
That's a good, like, end-of-year type of holiday season.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
The real, you know, rootsy Americana sounds. But they, you know, I love their songwriting. Mm-hmm. And I love the different voices that they had.
Yeah.
So I guess that's who I've been listening to
lately,
mainly.
That's cool.
But you know, you always try to listen to different things. There's one guy that is definitely, I love his music. Have you ever heard of Roosevelt? I think he's from somewhere in Europe.
Maybe,
but,
I don't know. I'm kidding.
But look him up on Spotify. He's got more like a, he's a solo artist, but it feels very, it's a lot of synthesizers, but still songwriting based. It's kind of weird. It's not like dance house music,
but it still has.
But it has that sound,
those elements in there.
Yeah, but it's definitely based off of songs, and I say that not just like a beat or a groove.
Right.
Like there's a song within it, which that's what I always am attracted to, no matter what genre it is.
That's interesting.
It's the songwriting
for sure. That makes sense. I mean, obviously, it's like because I can imagine you were saying about how you just dive into one artist or one sound. It's like you're trying to figure it out or trying to break it down and understand it on a deep level. I think that for me, I'm more rhythm based, so it's like I kind of jump all over the place. Mm-hmm. I listen to every genre, but it's very much I do always go back to that indie rock, indie pop, indie whatever that vibe is. But yeah, that's awesome. So, I know that one thing I read about in your bio, and I think in just listening to your music, you can tell, but you grew up playing in a church, right? You played, you're a minister, what is it?
I was a worship pastor for a while, yeah.
But yeah, as far as the music, I was thinking it was like the music minister, is that what it was?
Yeah, basically, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of that term anyways, but do you want to, I don't know, can you talk about that? Do you want to, I know that you... In your bio, you said that there was a point in your life recently that you stopped working for the church and wanted to go and focus on the solo group. I don't know. Is there anything to say there?
I came to my faith very young, and it's always been there for me. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is a heavy influence. But I was always in that. I was always attracted to people who could literally just be themselves and not be a genre.
Right.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Musically speaking, just musically. And so I wanted to, as a songwriter, even as I was young, I wanted to be able to just be me and not, you know, be under some Christian label or whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know, you have big ideas when you're young. So you're like, when I get older, I'm going to, so I think that's always carried on. Mm-hmm. And I did work in the church for about 19 years.
Yeah. A long time.
And I had a band during that time, where we played out and, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier, but kind of playing at the same time. And, and then that, We broke up, you know, life happens. Mm-hmm. I had babies and the bassist had babies.
Life happens.
One guy moved away. You get married and different things like that. So the band did break up, but I always had an aspiration to do another album.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know. Like I'm always writing. I'm always trying to write new songs and have, you know, songs in my back pocket.
Right.
But, It just never clicked on, hey, let's do it this way. Mm-hmm. So after COVID in 2020, mm-hmm. Our church did shut down in 21 because okay. we were a small little church, and it was just time. And anyway, so after that, I just thought, you know what? It was in the middle of that. It was in 2020 and 2021 where I started actually thinking, you know, I'm gonna do this, mm-hmm. and this meaning write and record a new album. I hadn't done that since mm-hmm. the band in 2008.
Yeah,
so it had been a long time,
over 10 years.
Yeah, so I was a good bedroom, you know, studio bedroom musician.
But you never stopped, like you always still wrote and played and all that, right? I mean, obviously you were playing in church, I assume, every week and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's different. Mm-hmm.
Keeping those chops up is a huge thing, I think.
Right, yeah.
When you step away from writing and original stuff, that's like a big fear. It happened to me for about 5 years. I didn't play, and I kind of regret it. Not really, but I mean, you know, it's like, obviously I'm back, so it's like...
Yeah. Sometimes a step away can be good, and it can also create hunger.
Yeah.
Right. Like mm-hmm. you're saying, you don't regret it, but maybe you're like, I don't want to do that again.
Right.
I did
like
that.
I can't step away from it that much.
Right.
Again,
right. Yeah. Because and that's what I found out within me is that going and recording another album that I hadn't done in 12 years mm-hmm. or so, 12, 14 years, it just really sparked that desire, that hunger again, mm-hmm. and that, like, wow, this never died within me, you know? A lot of things in life, you know, you're passionate about, and time, just good or bad, doesn't matter. It just, life just changes. Mm-hmm. You change. And that's the one thing that's always been constant since the time I picked mm-hmm. up that Sears guitar.
Right.
It has been just a desire to tell a story and hopefully do it in a way that moves mm-hmm. people, because... that's what music was to me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, listening to some of those early songs, you get chills, or you're like, something, you know, just rolling down your windows and turn it up as loud as you can and singing as loud as you can. And whatever reaction you get, mm-hmm. if there's some sort of reaction, that's, to me, that's the mystery and the mm-hmm. really powerful thing about music is that it can do that.
Yeah. It definitely evokes emotions and things that, you can't. I think that's true, because I always think about that with music, is it's very much a feeling. You feel music, I think, more than you even hear it. For mm-hmm. me, it's like I always, you know, am drawn to like a rhythm or something first, than before I even listen to a vocal or what the lyrics are, even just as personally. But I'm sure it's different for everybody. That's whatever it is that draws them in.
So
let's just talk about the album Milk River. It released June 30th, 2023, so it's been over a year now. There are 10 songs on it. It's folk rock genre. Let's see. Do you want to talk a little bit about it? Like what kind of maybe the themes or what's the overall kind of message would you say for the album?
Yeah. Some of the songs were older, and some of them were written just recent mm-hmm. before we recorded them. And so I preface that because they feel like they had big themes in them, like whether it was death or time mm-hmm. or God or love, like these things are big, you know, and a lot of songs are about those things. Mm-hmm. Not saying I'm like, you know, carving a new path or anything, but I think
it's your experiences of those things. So that's what's important. I think in any original art.
For sure. And so, to me, it felt big, and it had the weight of time mm-hmm. on it, in like, oh my God, I'm going to do this again. Mm-hmm. And so, the title comes from a book, a novel called Lonesome Dove, which is just it's a Western novel. Mm-hmm. And it just simply tells the story about these old cowboys in the late 1800s who drive their cattle from Texas to Montana, and Milk River is where they stop.
Okay.
And so for me, this album kind of felt like I'd been on this long dream, this long journey. Mm-hmm. You know, life happens all in between. And hopefully these songs kind of tell that story. Mm-hmm. And naming it Milk River was like, all right, I finally did it. I can put that to rest mm-hmm. and then start thinking about the next one. But, you know, that first one always feels like you're never going to get over that hurdle. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to find the time, or, you know, where you're going to find the money, the people that mm-hmm. believe in it, the people that want, you know, that really you feel like are there and that can put your vision down on paper.
Yeah.
Say.
Yeah. To just create a thing of, you exactly. know, that's going to be a permanent, you know,
right.
representation of a journey of, you know, I think it's incredible. That's a great description. I think it's kind of like this 10-year journey basically of your life that is summed up, you know, with these songs.
Yeah. And you begin to doubt a lot, you know, like when you live with demos for 5 years, you know, you've been in bands, like you have these ideas, these songs, and the longer you have them, the more you're like, are these ever going to be become real?
People are going to be able to hear them and experience it.
Yeah. So that was, that's been probably the greatest thing that's come from it. And then, and then being able to get out and play with them or play them and play with people.
And you get, like you're saying, you're seeing the reaction of someone live. I think that's probably the best thing about playing live for me too. Cause you can put stuff out on a record, but you know, you don't really know what people are saying unless they say it to you or whatever. So, that's awesome. So one thing I wanted to ask about the record, you recorded it at 33rd Street Studios. What was that like?
You know, it was really great. thankfully.
I've never been there. I know a lot about that. I know the guy.
Gilson.
Yeah,
you should check it out. And I say it was great and laugh because when I went into the album, I was thinking I was going to play everything and record it all at home. So like I was on reverb.com, I was on YouTube, learning all these things. And I can be technical to a point, you know, you run video and stuff. Like I can get technical to the point that I know this XLR needs to go into this microphone, but, this microphone needs to point at the amp, you know, but knowing like, I go deep. I was like, how do you learn how to mix? How do you learn how to do? And so I spent like 2 or 3 months doing that. And finally I was just like, this is not for me. This is not what I'm not going to get where I want to be by doing this. So I was like, okay, I'll just do the drums somewhere. And then I can do the rest at home. And so I went with that and cold emailed, I guess is how you'd say it. Cold called 33rd Street and did the, you know, looked at their website. I was like, listened to some things that they had. I was like, that sounds pretty good. And just sent an email and was, and the guy I had originally emailed, he didn't even respond. He was in the process of selling it and kind of getting over. Gilson was the one who responded. He was kind of the one doing and heading up the studio anyways. So I booked 8 hours to do the drums, and I met with my drummer a couple of days before. He was actually in my band back in 2007 and 8. And so we knew each other. He'd played with me in the church world as well. And so there's a lot of camaraderie, and he kind of knows where I'm going.
Yeah, he knows your style, I'm sure, and kind of knows maybe what you're wanting.
Exactly. And, you know, we would, anyway, so we booked 8 hours. We went over the songs beforehand, and then we went in, and that the two nights that we were doing drums, we Ryan McGuire, who recorded the drums, he did it all in 2 4-hour sessions, which to me is amazing. All 10 songs.
Like maybe 5 and 5.
I just sat with an acoustic and did the vocals and they were just scratch. And then he played along with me. And like, he didn't have any sort of demos except for maybe a couple of songs that he had known from the demos. But, that night or those two nights, I just working with Gilson, he immediately picked up on where we were going, asked the right questions, even like just was able to say, hey, wait, what about this? What about this? We put a lot of percussion on it.
A lot of ideas.
Yeah. And, he's just so good at like, he's a great engineer. I really think his talent is almost in producing and like hearing a song and knowing where to go with it, far more than his engineering, but so we just kind of sparked it, just a kindred friendship.
That's great. When you connect with somebody at some personal level that you can work well with.
Exactly. And so that night I took the drum sessions away and started working on parts because I didn't have, I had the songs written, but I didn't have parts.
Yeah.
And I did that for about a month, and then I just changed my mind. I was like, I got to go back to the studio because this is not sounding like I want it to. I don't know how to make it sound like I want it to. And being, playing the guitar or the piano or whatever it is, trying to be creative, and then turning around and trying to be very, you know,
it's
left brain on Pro Tools is not fun for me.
I know what that's like just from being in a band. Like, I produce all my own stuff, I mean, with whatever group I'm in, and it's like you do have to switch hats, you know, and you have to, I mean, I've gotten good at it, I think, just because I do that all the time with everything that I do. I'm wearing multiple hats. But it's like, but it is, and with mixing and playing, you have to, it's different. You have to get into a technical mode.
Yes.
And then switch back into a
creative mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was probably the best decision I made on the album.
Just to go fully into
exactly.
the studio.
Exactly, yeah. And so we did record the bass guitar out of the studio. Yeah. I took like a little portable studio to... my bassist, he lives in Eastern Oklahoma, a little town called Tahlequah. It's actually where I'm from.
Yeah.
He and I met. And
That's awesome.
He and the drummer, John, the bassist, he and the drummer were a part of our old group. So those two I knew.
Yeah.
Sit with them a couple hours. I knew they were going to get to where I wanted. And I had chosen them because I was like, I want that sound that they do.
Yeah.
And I want...
You knew that they could deliver.
Yeah, I wanted them to play on it. The other stuff... I knew I was going to have to fill in it. And another guy, Randy Sanders, he played guitar on it, and it just
was
extremely
like
amazing.
He
played a lot of the lead stuff, and was just amazing. And so, but yeah, Gilson just throughout the whole process just came up with great ideas. So I'll look at this camera and promote 33rd Street Studios. And Gilson is so good at, like, he just created an environment where we could be creative and was laid back, but also wasn't laid back to where it was are we going to get anything done?
Right, like he was directing and making sure stuff got done that needed to get done.
So much that he and I actually were in a little bit of pre-talk and pre-production on another album coming up that I've got.
Yeah, you're already starting to plan.
Awesome. So we're going to start throwing down ideas. How do we do this one different? Because this album was I love where it ended, but for me, there wasn't as much collaboration as I would
like with other, maybe the rest of the band or whatever. Right,
right. And I think obviously being in a band beforehand, you know, there was two songwriters in it, and but it was kind of a democracy. But you know, in a band, there's always got to be at least somebody who calls the final shot, and calling all the shots on a solo record and it was a little different. But then learning, learning new things about yourself was like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. And then also learning from the guys who did collaborate on it just sparked, like, oh my gosh, the three guys that did play on this album, and having Gilson's just input and thoughts direction, production. Yeah. I mean, honestly, he produced some of the album, even though we didn't plan on doing that, has made me want to be like, okay, the next album, I want to lean that way and lean less solo Luke in the bedroom figuring things out.
Because I get it, because it's like, and there's some people I'm sure that do work really well where they just know exactly how everything needs to be.
Yes.
And I think you could do that, but that's like, I always say, for me personally, playing music, if I had to play music by myself, I wouldn't do it. I mean, you know, it's like, that's not why I play.
I'm not talented enough for one, but I also don't have just the discipline to be like a Sufjan Stevens and like everything,
like the guy
is the whole album.
Tame Impala.
Those kind of guys.
I don't want anyone else doing stuff for them. It's like those people, they know, they have their vision and they know how to execute it.
Exactly. So they're on a different level to me.
Not everybody, most people I think aren't able to do that. I guess, how long did the entire process take? I know you said you started at the drums first, but I don't know. I'm always curious about how long it took, you feel like, for the 10 songs to come together in the studio.
It took a lot longer than it should have. Studio time, it only probably took maybe 2 weeks.
Right.
But we hodgepodged it. Mm-hmm. So it took about a year.
Yeah.
From the time I did the drums, mm-hmm. and then I spent about 3 to 4 months writing mm-hmm. Parts.
Yeah, filling out certain parts.
And recording the bass. So, mm-hmm. you know, that took us about a month where he and I met, and then we would, you know, talk about ideas and mm-hmm. And as far as like keys and guitars, mm-hmm. I would throw down as much as I could. And then, because obviously, you know, money's a real matter. So uh-huh. I was like, I got to get all this stuff down before I go spend time in the studio.
That's always a big thing that I recommend. Because I record, I produce music too. But it's like, I love it. It's like, you got to practice your butt off beforehand. And then you come in here. And some guys I know that are really good at that. And they just come in and knock out their parts in like 2 or 3 takes. And it's very... That is always the best thing to do, I recommend, for any musician.
Yeah, no.
For recording.
Yes. The novice of us, that we gotta practice.
Like you said, that time is money. You're paying whatever per hour, and it's like you don't want to waste any of it.
Right.
That seems to be how it goes.
Yeah,
I feel like
it was about a year.
With most projects, it's going to take more time than you want it to, but mm-hmm. I think it's, as long as you keep at it and don't, you know,
right,
just don't let it fall.
I think we wrapped up, like, I think we finally got the masters January, February of 23.
Yeah.
And then we released it that June.
Yeah.
Just because then, you know, you go into the art and
mm-hmm. get all the promotions and stuff, trying to get that rolling for sure.
Yeah.
You want to have plenty of lead up time before you release.
Yeah.
Let's talk about maybe some of the songs. I'm always curious to ask people, like, what's your process? Like, how do you come up with song ideas? Do you, like, start with chord progressions and then build melodies? Or, I don't know, what do you...
it's a good question. I think for me it's different. Feels like it's different every time.
Yeah.
But probably the one that hits the most is sitting at a guitar mm-hmm. or a piano mm-hmm. and just... just wordlessly, mindlessly singing words, and finding melodies.
Kind of, just doing the whole like scat type of fake words that aren't
right. And so for me, it starts with a chord progression, mm-hmm. and then, you know, trying to find an interesting melody over mm-hmm. that. Lyrics, they're always coming.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, whether it's in my notes on my phone or, you know, mm-hmm. on my computer, just, I'm always trying to just jot down cool ideas, or once I have a topic, I can go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm more concerned about finding something interesting musically first, that inspires me or moves me, mm-hmm. and then go from there. And it's funny, some of the songs, you know, you talk about the scat singing and stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't know. I don't know. I don't know how you do it, but you don't really know what you're saying, or you know, you're saying just wordless syllables sometimes. Sounds, but actually, sometimes those become the lyrics.
Yeah.
It's funny,
or it's like a word will make its way there.
Yeah,
you know, or it'll, like a sound will sound. I mean, because that's why I think I don't do any, you know, lyrical writing. I have played with it before, and it's just like it's like I found it fascinating by like words themselves have their own, like, musicality, you know, just on a certain type of word. So you can kind of flip a different word with the same meaning and get different, mm-hmm. you know, same message, but it's going to sound different depending on what word you choose.
And sometimes you think, I got to find words that sound like those syllables I was singing.
Yeah.
Because that's the cadence of mm-hmm. it fits. And so mm-hmm. That would be probably the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. It starts with just scatting and finding a progression. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very rarely does it all come at once.
Right. I'm always just fascinated because everybody does it differently, mm-hmm. and there's no right or wrong way to do it.
Right.
Obviously. Like, but it is fascinating, I think, the process, because you have a finished product and it's like no one really knows how it became that, mm-hmm. you know, except you mm-hmm. or whoever was there. So I always love talking about that. So let's see. Yeah, you've been writing songs your whole life, I assume, going back to your first band. What was the name of it? Up from Under.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you guys were like an indie rock?
Yeah, that's like, probably the best way to put it. Yeah.
It's fascinating because, yeah, I had a band back then. Our band was me and Nick Campbell, who's also on the show. He's now a comedian. He's also a singer-songwriter. He just doesn't do it anymore or as much, but not on stage at all. But our band was called Aliens versus Robots.
Okay.
And it was kind of like This Is Us in the photo.
Oh, nice. Which one's he?
Right there.
The singer? Guitar and singer?
Yeah, okay. Guitar. And then, yeah, that was us in our garage. But that was in 2006. So I was like, that was fascinating that we were active around Oklahoma City at the same time.
Yeah.
What kind of venues did you guys play back then? Do you remember any notable?
We were not very good at playing live.
Yeah.
But we did play some. We played the Jazz Lab at UCO a lot.
I remember that, yeah.
And they always were so good about just letting local music play. Where else do we? We played the fair one time or a couple times.
Yeah.
The arts festival one time. And we did do a small acoustic tour. Mm-hmm. It was our first time to ever get on the road and play a couple, you know, five or six shows. We did that through Kansas and Arkansas, Missouri. That's awesome. That was a blast. Cause for our band, it always did start with, the other songwriter, Will, it always started with us writing on acoustic guitars and we grew up together and like we learned kind of how to sing together when we were kids and how to harmonize. And we had such a good rapport of like a safe place to share ideas and honest ideas and say, that's not very good. Right. Or, you know, we'll pocket that one for later. But, you know, as we grew older, we got better at that. Our first album was right out of high school. And if you listen to it, it's amusing to me because it's about 10, that's an exaggeration. It's about 5 different genres.
Yeah. It's all over the place.
Yeah. We didn't really know. We wrote songs that sounded and reminded us of bands we liked.
Yeah.
And whether that was Weezer or Radiohead or Simon and Garfunkel,
had some of that folk in there.
Yeah, we went that way, and so, but the second album we recorded, we did it all ourselves. Mm-hmm. A friend of ours had a recording studio, and he let us come in the night or like the days he didn't have anybody booked.
Okay,
and so we learned.
So you just ran it yourselves.
We did. Yeah. And we didn't know. Like, we had done enough, you know, acoustic type stuff in GarageBand in our dorms and stuff. Mm-hmm. But we'd never done something that major. And it was a big hurdle. But at that, you know, when you're in your early 20s, you're hungry and you're willing to like learn. And
just do what
you got the time.
Yeah.
That's the other big thing. And so we recorded that second album, which really proud of the first one, but you can definitely tell it's adolescent kind of.
But that's okay.
It's part of the journey.
It's like you got to put something out and it's not going to be as good as the next one, hopefully. You know what I mean? Like that's what I always think. It's like everything that I make, hopefully, is the best thing that I've ever made.
Right, right. Yeah.
Or at least like as far as a technical level with mixing and stuff.
Right. Sure. And ideas like just lyrically. Yeah. And, you know, our second one was much more mature and just
focused.
Different. Yeah, more focused. Mm-hmm. That's a great word for it. And we had the band. The first album we did most of it. The second time we did it with a band, and that actually went out and played some shows together. So that was a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. And we put 6 songs together on that EP, and we're able to play it. And
nice.
But then, like I said, we did try to hit it hard for about a year to 2 years, but. None of us were very good about being the admin / go push your music out. Mm-hmm. And you need that in a band. Mm-hmm. You got, even though that it may not be looked at as like, oh, you know, you're taking away from the music. Well, nobody's going to hear it if you don't do that. So you can either all just listen to it and love it and 5 of you go home or you can be proud of it and go.
Yeah.
So we had to learn that a little bit.
For sure. Yeah. I think it's, because you kind of always expect that it's like, oh, if it's, because you think it's the best thing in the world. So it's like, well, as soon as everyone hears this, it's just going to blow up.
Exactly.
That's not how it works.
Exactly. Or, you know, you feel like, this is the dark side of the moon to me.
This is going to change the world.
If you don't think it is, I'm going to be crushed. Yeah, exactly. You know?
That's probably really what it is. It's the fear that it's not the best thing ever. Exactly. So, and finding that out is going to be tough. For yeah. Sure.
But, you know, but learning that that's part of songwriting too, is, you know, learning to, music's going to hit you in different ways, mm-hmm. hit everybody in different ways, right. I guess. Yeah, and it's not always going to be the dark side of the moon for everybody. Mm-hmm. But people can enjoy it. People can, love it and not, you know, I don't know, watch The Wizard of Oz with it for
and talk. It,
it doesn't have to be that. Yeah. is what I'm trying to say.
The most iconic thing. Right. So kind of getting back or staying on this topic is like growing up in Oklahoma, playing in Oklahoma, what's it been like in your experience? Like, I don't know, is it like, cause I know it's not the greatest place to play music, but it's, there are opportunities.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
You know, definitely. And you could help me. Mm-hmm. But like back into late 2000s, it felt like just almost a straight vertical wall you would hit. It was hard for us to break into anywhere and to build those relationships. Coming back into it a decade later, I really feel like this place is completely different. There are so many people open to having you play.
Less gatekeeping.
There's less gatekeeping. The gatekeepers are very open. And are you know, a place that's been really good to me is, and it's been through a relationship with Gilson, was Resonant Head. I've been able to play there a couple of times. And just to be able to have a space that supports local music, and what's cool to watch them is they're getting, like, their venue's getting big. You can see the shows they're booking.
I've been there. I've seen one show there. And the thing I love about that place is the sound. I think that they know that. That's why it's named that. I think it's the acoustics they very much pay attention to, and it's in the everything. It's a beautiful stage, awesome lights, but the sound is like what's the important about that place, I think.
It was what we actually did our first show there. It was a great place to do that. And but no, I feel like, and then you got things like this that is just out there supporting whatever, whether it is comedy or whether it is music or art or whatever. There's, I think, the technology is at our fingertips, and so as funny as it sounds, I think back then the technology was still getting here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I remember we had our MySpace page and we're sharing, like, that's how I networked and met bands and stuff was through MySpace. I mean, that was the only way it was possible for, you know, that I knew how to do, I guess. I mean, obviously you could just hit the streets and meet people, but I was always not very good at that. You know, I'm very more introverted, more, you know, harder to meet people that I don't know, you know. Yeah. The internet has made that a little bit more accessible for people like me, I think.
Sure.
A lot of musicians that are introverts and things like that.
Yeah, social media has helped a lot in that. But so I'm excited. You know, you'd talked about Oklahoma City becoming a place. I really, or Oklahoma in general, I should say. I really do feel like it could. And there's those long stapled places that have been around too that are still there, you know, like the Blue Door. Well, I guess they're new, but I feel like there was a Blue Door when we were
I remember that's always been. I've never been to any, you know, rendition of it or whatever, because I know it's, but I do think it's the same place. As far as I know, it might be different owners.
I recently went there. A friend had invited me to one of the song swaps, and so I just went and listened. And it was just so cool because it literally was songwriter after songwriter after songwriter, just sharing a song and then playing together. And it's those types of communities and atmospheres that are really neat to see happening. I may have not even just been aware of them a decade ago, but it really did feel like it was tough to get into something like that.
For sure.
And so I will say, I definitely, as far as like my music, it has to go beyond Oklahoma as far as anybody, you know, everybody knows that, but because, you know, I'd love to take a tour of Texas and take it around there or wherever it is. But I felt like it's been really received here well. And there's cool people around.
I do think that about your stuff, because I didn't know. I mean, I kind of had an idea of what your stuff was when we had met, and I listened to the album recently, and it's like, I think it's perfect for Oklahomans. I mean, people love that classic rock or country, obviously, here. That's my big struggle with playing music in Oklahoma, because I just want to play rock music, and no one cares about rock anymore. It sucks, right? You know, but you know, it is what it is. But I think that there is ways to get it, because my current band, we're just kind of forming together. This guy Josh Bartruck, I've been playing with for a couple of years. We had a group called Stolen Cable that was kind of this garage rock type, almost like punk, you know, kind of pop punk, I guess, whatever. But that kind of fell apart. Well, he moved to Japan for a year, okay, and then now he's back, so we started a new group. But he's got a very 60s influence, and he loves folk, and so he calls it kind of this country garage, because he does play some blues and country stuff. So it's like, I think that's the way in, you know? It's get in with people here anyways, because they love their country and and blues around here, which I like. I mean, I think it's fine, but I do wish rock was kind of more prevalent. But
I agree. It'd be nice if there was a whole array of genres.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, that's really the best scenario, mm-hmm, is that, like, because you should be able to go downtown and see at least two or three different genres, right. And it's like, now it's like there's country, there's maybe some. You know, if you go to clubs or whatever, they're going to be blasting whatever pop, right, 40, right, or whatever.
That's what's cool about Make Oklahoma Weirder.
Yeah,
open mic. I was telling you about, right, like the artists there were singer songwriters, mm-hmm, but there was a lot of different. There was a punk. There was a guy who was in a punk band.
Yeah,
and he literally got up and played a punk song, mm-hmm, with just his electric guitar.
Yeah,
no, there wasn't a band because it was an open mic, right, and a song swap, and mm-hmm. I was like, this was cool.
Yeah.
Good job. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could have done that when I was there.
I love that open mic because it's all original. It's like, I've met a lot of people through that. Like, mm-hmm, I think it's definitely something, if you're looking to meet musicians, that's the way to go. Because, I mean, there's not enough. That's the other thing, is open mics around here. There's a ton of them. A lot of them are kind of comedy focused. So, mm-hmm, the ones that I know about, not very many music focused ones these days, at least. Yeah. And then hopefully that'll change, but I think it's harder to do a little bit. I don't know, but so let me jump around here. Let's see. Okay. Do you have any other hobbies? Any other creative things that you get into? I love asking that question because I think most creative people have you do one thing, but there's other things too, you know, somewhere, maybe not as focused, but
I do. I was an English major in college.
Okay.
And so I love to just write. Mm-hmm. One of the very low on the list, bucket list items for me would be to write a novel. Yeah. I don't think I'll ever get there, but actually, I think I have a file saved on my, mm-hmm, computer that says, please finish me.
Right, yeah.
It's a novel. It's like I'll never finish it. But I do love that. Mm-hmm. I do love, right now, honestly, like, being able to play, this is still in the same genre as music, mm-hmm, but listening, I have three kids, but two of them are getting into middle school band.
Okay,
and one's been playing the trombone, one's been playing the flute for a while. And it's really neat. We talk about reading music. They're reading, mm-hmm, music.
Yeah.
And they ask me all the time, they're like, Dad, you can't play. So they're like, well, I could if I sat down for about 45 minutes.
Figured
it out.
Yeah.
So like listening to them is a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to share that camaraderie, because I'm doing a lot of writing right now at, mm-hmm, home, and a lot of my demos, they're in the background.
Yeah.
life is in the background, right, of them. I don't really care though, because they're just about getting ideas down.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to share that with them is really neat.
Yeah.
And so the other thing is I my day job, mm-hmm, is in real estate.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of creativity, mm-hmm, in that. You know, everything is different. Every project's different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really love that about that, mm-hmm, that it's not, you know, doing the same thing every day.
Right.
But, you know, with each project that comes, it's kind of like a song almost. Each project has its own face. It has its own, you know, what it wants to be and where it wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
just like a lot of songs where, you know, melody will come and you're like, all right, this is where I feel like that would, that
yeah
wants to be at.
Yeah, so what's it, where it's trying to go. I think that's a lot of, I do think that about music, especially as I say that I've been saying this a little bit lately, but as far as I've been playing for almost 20 years, give or take like a 5-year break. But, you know, it's like at a certain point, it's like you stop, you don't play the music anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like your body knows how to play the instrument and you're here, you know, Josh will come in with a chord progression and some melodies and I'll hear it and I might try to, I'll fumble around and find where the key is and where I can play. But once I kind of get the vibe down, something just happens and mm-hmm. then that's what it is. And then I keep doing it and it gets, you know, I refine it from there. But right. So it's like, I never chose these notes actually, yeah. you know, yeah. it's like they came from somewhere else, but
yeah,
I think that's definitely a fascinating thing about music. And I think that it is different when you're learning, you really have to put a lot of effort into what you're playing. But at a certain point, it's like, it just comes out of you.
Right. Right. Yeah. I would say that for me, I can definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. And so songwriting wise, yeah. it's getting out of that. Mm-hmm. And so trying to find ways that you're not in that same old, you know, this is where I would go to this, yeah. right. I would go to this progression, mm-hmm. you know, I do love, you know, searching out music, or in a way, what helps me get out of that rut a lot, honestly, is doing something like running or something physical,
yeah,
where
absolutely.
You're doing something mindless mm-hmm. in a way. And it's interesting. I can remember on this album and even on this new album that I'm writing, mm-hmm. I do a lot of writing in my head yeah. while I'm jogging.
Well, I think I do that too. It's like, cause I go and walk, I don't jog cause my knees suck and my joints, but like I'll just walk for like yeah. 2 or 2 miles, 2-3 miles and just, but yeah, I'll like, and sometimes I do, I'll listen to demos obviously, mm-hmm. but there's a point where it's like, you're playing them. Like your body is almost doing the movements somehow, like while you're yeah. listening or yeah. thinking about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah. awesome. So let's see, I got a few more things we can get into. I always liked asking this question about like, what's been the biggest challenge that you've had to face in order to achieve the success that you've had so far? Is there anything that comes to mind?
You know, for me, I guess there's two things. One's time, mm-hmm. In, you know, having a family and a full-time job, you know, making sure you're not burning both candles yeah, or the candle right, at both ends, yeah. but you know, having a healthy balance, mm-hmm. but also trying to you know, hustle and, mm-hmm. and get it done and do that. So that the time, cause you know, every time I'm away, it's taken away from something else.
Right. And, it's like your family, yeah. obviously, and kids and stuff.
Yeah. My kids are at a, mm-hmm. at an age where they're being home, being dad is important. Mm-hmm. But also teaching them to chase
yeah.
a dream.
It's like you want to show them that they can.
Right.
Yeah.
You can do something that's in your heart. Mm-hmm. And my daughter, she's 10 years old. She loves Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty typical. And it you know, yeah. we got Taylor Swift all over her walls and stuff. So she always compares me to Taylor Swift.
Yeah. It's like, that's the music that she consumes exactly. the most. So
she's like, Dad, I don't think you're ever going to be as big as Taylor Swift. And I'm like, you know, I don't think so. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if
like,
I'd really want to.
I don't think anyone ever will be again.
Right.
Maybe.
Exactly.
I'm sure someone will, but.
Yeah. We'll be dead by then.
That's like very few and far between that anyone yeah. reaches.
There's
that.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, exactly.
There's Taylor Swift. I don't know if
yeah.
there's much
I mean, the
more.
Beatles, probably, yeah. you know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but
really
so time, and then, you know, just within mm-hmm. that same vein, just hustling and trying to find opportunity and make the most of opportunities.
Right.
You know, trying to play at the right places, mm-hmm. play, sounds, you know, try to find those places to play at and,
yeah.
and just branch out and get more ears on mm-hmm. your music.
Yeah, just finding a newer, more and more audience
yeah.
and people that want to see some original music.
Right, right.
For sure. I think it's, Yeah, I think that's always the time thing for sure. As we get older, everyone's there's so many things that demand our time.
Right.
That's to pull it away from
right.
What we want to try to focus on. And it's definitely hard finding that balance.
It is. And then there's days where you completely, you succeed in that. Mm-hmm. But then there's days where you don't. Yeah. And trying to just allow yourself, forgive yourself. And be like, you know what? It doesn't have to be that. But, we all have the other side's like, we all have 24 hours and we all, everybody has the challenges of that. Mm-hmm. So not an excuse in a way, but just trying to do what you feel, you want to do and feel called to do in life is important. So,
I think so. I think that's what I always try to encourage with this program too, is just trying to show people that it's okay to do creative things. And it's like, you don't have to be stuck in, most people have jobs that they probably don't necessarily love or not is what they're passionate about, and it's like they go work 40 hours a week and then come home and sit down and watch Netflix and they're miserable and they don't know why. It's like, it's because you're missing that creative thing that you're saying that's you're meant to do, I think.
Right.
And whatever it is, it doesn't have to be art or music. It can be, some kind of important job or a way of doing something new or something. Mm-hmm. There's plenty, but, okay. So yeah, you've been playing a lot lately, or at least, in the past 6 months or so, this past year, I assume to promote the album and everything, but what's been like one of your favorite shows lately? Or I know that one show that I missed you at, I remember I meant to come see you play at the Plaza Fest this year on the main stage. How was that?
That was a blast.
Yeah.
It was a good reminder of what it's like to play in something like that.
Yeah.
Where you just...
It's always a big crowd out there.
You hop up on stage and it's like, play your stuff and then get off.
Yeah.
So it reminded me of that, the old movie... That thing you do. Did you ever see it with Tom Hanks where they're like, unplug and go. What if they want an encore? No, you just unplug and go. But that it was a ton of fun. And being up on the main stage and it was great. One of the things we did this year that while I was running, one of the ideas that comes when you're jogging is we were coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the album. And I thought, man, what can I do to do something this month to promote it. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a book by a guy out in LA. His name's Ari. I can't remember his last name, but he wrote a book called The New Music Business or something.
Yeah, okay.
Anyways, he talked a lot about live streaming and doing things. Like, he was talking about what bands did back in 2020 when things shut down and they couldn't tour. And so, he was talking about the success stories of bands putting a camera up in a room and playing whether it was down and dirty or whether it was really professional.
Right.
Some of them were.
It's just so easy to send that out to millions of people if you want.
So I got the idea. I was like, well, I should live stream a concert and just do the album. And that was a really great, simple idea that turned into, we actually did it, but it was a lot harder and a lot more work and heavy lifting than I actually thought it was going to be. But it was, the right people just got around it. A videographer and Gilson actually recorded it for me and he played in it.
Live,
I don't know how he did that, but like you go from recording to playing. And we rented a studio in Midtown.
Okay.
We spent a Sunday recording the songs, which was a blast. And then we pseudo live streamed it.
Yeah.
I did want to live.
It wasn't live, right?
It wasn't live. Right.
Yeah.
And that was the original idea. Yeah. But as I got around Gilson and my videographer, they were like, Are you sure you want to do this? Because, the pressure of playing live is there already. But then if you put in the fact that you got the live stream happening and you got, making sure the audio sounds good, it takes a lot of manpower. Yeah. And so we did. We pre-recorded it and then put it all together, which was a ton of fun. And that's actually how I met Evan Jarvix.
Okay.
Was I'd seen that he'd done a lot of things around town. and I wanted to have some sort of host, some sort of person
like
to
introduce it.
Was separate from the music, and he was down for it. We met for coffee one night. I kind of shared the vision with him, and he was like, "I'd love to do this." And
that's awesome.
It was really neat to spend time with him and talk about the album and really celebrate a year of it. And so we actually have it on YouTube, and you can watch the whole concert if you want to.
I love the videos, like live performance videos. That's something that I got into heavily during the lockdown of 2020. Was like, I was sitting in my house watching, you know, you run out of stuff on YouTube or on Netflix or whatever, and then I started watching like live performances, a lot of live concerts of old shows of whoever that was I could find that I liked. Or, but there's like a KEXP.
Yeah, KEXP.
Yeah. That's I want to do that. Like I want, I'm going to. I think it's like I'm gonna have, because one of my ideas for this show, obviously, and another thing that along the same lines, you did, didn't you do Circle Lotus?
Media? We did. Yeah.
I've never met those guys that do that. I don't know if they're still doing it either, but they were a huge inspiration. Or I want to do the same thing as that and have local bands come over. But my thing is like I'm going to add in this part of it. It's like I want to have an interview. I want to have the couch, and it's like do the whole late night thing, and it's like have them perform, record it live, you know, multiple cameras, have a nice audio, and then after they're done, sit down on the couch and I'll ask questions and things like that.
Let me know. I'll come do it with you. Kay, that's funny you mentioned that.
I want to do that for sure. I love that.
KEXP, that's who I kept.
Yeah.
I was like, have you ever seen KEXP on YouTube? Have you ever seen KEXP? That's what I want to do. That show's awesome.
Yeah.
They do a great job on that.
I've watched a ton of their stuff because I love their artists. They're all like this stuff, this underground indie stuff that nobody's ever heard of. But it's like, I know these people. It's like, I love it.
I've found a lot of great music through that. Like, and then some of the bigger acts that come through there, it's fun to watch them kind of get stripped down.
Yeah, for sure. And I love it too. I think as a musician, because you get to really see what everyone's doing and just like, oh my gosh, some of these groups are, you don't really see. I've heard their recordings, but it's like I've never seen them live or whatever, but those things are really good. But yeah, that's kind of one of my big goals with my YouTube stuff, is like I'd want to start doing that. And it's like a lot of it is just the time, like you said, and the space. I mean, like I was telling you too, it's like hopefully within the next year or so, maybe think about moving into a bigger house or having a little bit more room for that kind of stuff. But
yeah, you should do it. You should go for it. Because I know a lot of, like, when I was releasing the album, I knew I needed some sort of video of us playing live. And it's hard for young bands. Mm-hmm. It's hard for even songwriters, one, to have the equipment. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then it takes money. But then it's like, well, I don't know how to do that, right?
Like, how do you edit?
Exactly.
Mix audio, all that stuff.
And everybody can do it to an extent, but you need it to look a certain way.
Yeah. And so, if you want it to stand out, for sure. Yeah,
providing that for groups would be
cool. That's definitely all a part of it, too. Because I know how important video is for, like, even booking gigs. You have to have an actual decent video of your group, or most bookers aren't even going to pay attention to it. They don't want to just hear your music. They don't care what you sound like. They want to know what you look like, what your vibe is.
Yep.
So
that's exactly the whole package. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of all I had. I guess we can talk about kind of what's next. Like, what can you say about the new album, like, as far as your vision? Like, I mean, you know, you can kind of go into whatever you like.
You know, we're going to continue to hopefully play next year and promote this album but the new one, I didn't expect myself to be itching to record a new album.
To get back and do it again.
But they're there. The songs are there. And I'm just trying to, I want to keep the momentum going. And so the new stuff, as I was talking earlier, definitely want to collaborate more. And we're even toying around with, you know, if we found a space. Could we record this live?
Yeah.
Because so many of the, I was telling Gilson, I was like, so many of these albums that I love the way they sound.
Yeah.
He was like, well, the reason they sound that way is because they're in a certain room, certain players, and that is the sound of that place that day. And, you know, you can get, that can cause a lot of problems recording live.
It's hard.
It's really hard. And, but we, you know, so we've just been talking a lot about how do we, you know.
What does that look like?
What does that look like? Yeah. You know, what type of loose parameters do we want to set on ourselves? Because if you're in a sandbox, you can go wherever you want.
Right.
Yeah, just kind of talking about that conceptually.
Yeah.
And the album itself, you know, the songs that are coming are definitely going to be, I think, like a sidestep to where this album was. I feel like it's a good natural, maybe forward step, maybe a sidestep, I don't know. But backward step.
But it's not quite going to be the same. It'll be a little bit different vibe.
Yeah, and I really want it to have that sound of a group of guys or you know, gals playing in a room, singing in a room, and I say with less of me, in a way that's just like, this was, it's not a band, but it's a group effort. Exactly. And so I hope to have, you know, some different singers on it and singing with me.
Yeah.
And
harmonies. I love that.
Yeah.
I love like multiple voice. I like even doing like doubles of someone's voice and layering that. I love it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I love that too.
A lot of
it does
to the vocal for sure.
It does. So yeah, I'm excited about it though. Like I said, I didn't expect it, and I'm excited to see where it will go, and then and also learning the lessons that I learned on Milk River, and in the studio, but also the post stuff, the releasing. I joked with a guy I met at the place where we met,
the
music thing. The networking thing. I was talking to some young guys who were about to release their album, and I was telling him, I was like, I made a huge mistake. I released the album like it was 1992 on June 30th instead of like, you know, single this month.
Build up.
I was completely an idiot.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, acted like it was 25 years prior to this year. But you live and you learn. So I was telling him, I was like, you should find a single, find a couple songs that you want to highlight and tease.
Do a video. It's like there's a lot to, I think, a build up of to a release that you can do that really helps. I mean, I've learned these things. I haven't been able to put too many of them in practice just because it's like it's hard to release albums actually have material and everything to even get to that point.
Right. But, well, and nobody, I mean, it's hard for people to give the time to an album in our day and age. You know, and so I wouldn't want to presume that I'm worth somebody's 45 minutes or something, but I am stuck in what I grew up in,
I think,
and
that's...
I love it. And, you know, it's like somebody, I don't know, in paint or art or, you know, saying I'm stuck in this era of, you know, in writing. It's like, you know, I'm stuck in the romantics of the 19th century and don't want to move to the modernists of the 20th century. So I'm just going to keep reading this.
I think when it comes to that debate versus, because there's this like singles versus full-length albums or whatever, but I think that that's been going on every other decade for, you know what I mean?
Good point.
You go back to the 60s and it's like, and the Beach Boys were just all about singles for so long, and it's like that was what, and it's like then they went away into the 70s into this, you know, long
the double LPs,
all that. So that's what I do like. I think that there's something about a full-length album that's like, it's like watching a movie or you know, watching something that's like this long narrative versus like those quick hits. I mean, that's what I think is popular now because of social media and the internet. It's like you want, I think that, I mean, I don't agree with this or I don't necessarily want to do this, but I think that one of the best ways to become, you know, popular is to just release singles and just have a new song every month, you know, that you're always relevant, you know, because you're always putting stuff out.
Yeah. So, no, it definitely, hard, that's what I enjoy about it too, is it is like, maybe reading a novel or writing a book or reading, watching a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something about the wholeness to it. Mm-hmm. But there's also something about a really good single that just hits. And it's funny, talking to my 13-year-old, because he's into music, and he kind of went through the same thing I did. Like, he loved the Beatles about 2 years ago, but he's 13 now. The Beatles were cool, but Dad, I need to find my music, right? And that's good. You want him to do that, but he doesn't know what albums are.
Yeah, exactly.
He knows what vinyl is.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know
that's a cool thing, because the vinyl, that is kind of what goes into the record. That's because I have a small collection. It's like I've never really been super into it, but I think that there's something about putting on a record and listening to it front to back, and just like you flip it and then you listen to the other half, and it's just... Yeah. Yeah, that's something, and it's cool because vinyls are back, and a lot of kids, a lot of people are interested in that. So maybe that'll bring back that.
And it could, you know. Vibe. I say that he and I have debates because he's like, I don't like Rubber Soul. So as I say that, he talks to me about albums. I just wonder if it's going to translate into the new stuff that he likes. Is it?
Yeah.
Is he's been talking to me about Tyler the Creator and Kendrick Lamar, a ton, and. You know, there's some things in there he doesn't need to be listening to.
Yeah.
But so we're trying to, you know, filter that and talk about it together. Safe, right.
You know, what you're comfortable with.
Right. As a 13-year-old. Yeah. But I also want to listen to him with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it'll be interesting to see if, like, the idea of the Beatles albums will translate to, does Kendrick Lamar make albums, or is it just about this one song?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, what do they care about, for sure?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, it's fascinating. I'm always thinking about that too. I think that there's something to do or my idea would be, I love doing EPs. I think that's a good way to kind of break it down. But you know, you're always going to want to do that. Or I feel like, you know, people like you and me are always going to want that one big album, like once every couple of years at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you can do EPs, or you could do some singles, and kind of, I always think of just focusing like a video, just make a original song, do a video for it, and kind of focus on that. That's a shorter time frame that you can kind of do those maybe a few times a year and kind of keep your relevance up. And it's like people interested in that new, everyone's always craving what's the new thing. So.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think it also, it dictates where you're at in your career, you know, for me, it's about hustling and getting my name out there and got, like I said, getting more ears on it. I did an album because I needed material to be able to play.
Yeah.
Right. be able to play an hour and not do 9 covers and 1 original.
Exactly.
But it's funny because if I were the Taylor Swift, I mean, her entire last 3 years have been about albums.
Yeah.
My daughter has a, whatever 9 albums she has, the whole Eras tour is about each album.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, but there's no difference in what you were talking about. Like, if you get to a certain level, you can be the Led Zeppelin and do a double album. Mm-hmm. You can be the Taylor Swift and do a whole tour on albums, or you know. But if you're at this point where you're just hustling to get, you know, 20,000 listeners, it's about just content. So it's funny how it kind of dips, and then you're allowed to do it. But it wasn't any different than when we were, you know.
It's similar. I think there is a certain process for, you know, I do think about a lot, like, how do you get. With everything that we do, it's like, how do you get more people, more attention, more people, more eyes or ears on whatever you're doing? And I think that there's really no right or wrong way to do it. I mean, there's probably definitely plenty of wrong ways, but everyone that succeeded has probably done it differently, at least a little bit or a lot differently. I mean, there's many paths, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of about finding what works best for you.
And really, what is that success for you?
Because
at my age, honestly, doing an album again, it was like, why? That was the first question my wife asked me. It's like, well, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. And one, it was just because it's there and I need to do it.
Something that's in you that's like, you can't. Like I said, if you bottle that stuff up, you're just going to get depressed.
right.
So, and then nobody's going to be happy, you know, in the family. So you kind of have to. I think it's good. I'm glad that you did it and are getting out there and doing this and just doing original stuff here in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about like where people can find you? Like, where can they listen to the album? Social media, whatever you want to promote.
So mainly on Instagram, as far as like daily or not daily,
yeah,
more like monthly updates. Yeah. I'm awful
but
at
that's
it.
Your kind of regular updates.
There. Yeah, yeah. And but then you can also go to my website, which has I have the album streaming there, but you can stream it on Spotify, Apple, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And my YouTube channel, but mainly it's that YouTube and Instagram that probably I am there the most. So you can connect with me there and yeah, and just hope that, like I said, play a couple, you know, more shows around here and kind of broaden the regional.
Start thinking about that other Wichita and Texas.
Yeah, exactly.
Kansas. Let's see. So you're at, what is the Instagram handle?
It's a good question. It's, I think it's just Luke Roundtree. That's a good question.
Well, I'll go to the website, lukeroundtree.com.
Yeah, there you go. That's the best. There's a link there.
That's the probably the best. I think it's very well done. I think that's something that you had sent to me. I just didn't know that you even had that, but I think it's very important for people to have a website if you can afford one, because and there are, you know, different affordable options. You can get a free one, but I think it is something where it's like it doesn't matter what social media you use because everything is there.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah,
like it feels like you're. When I was putting the website together, it felt like I was putting a MySpace together. I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, people don't go to websites anymore.
No, I think it is, you know, and a lot of people don't. They're just going to go on Facebook or Instagram. But, I mean, the people that, you know, are really going to open the doors, that's what it's for. It's like the media or press or whatever.
It is. That's the first question that anybody asks is like, well, do you have this and this?
And I do think that it is a certain level where it's like if you have a website – it kind of you're legitimizing yourself, but just by having that, and other people kind of see that, and it's like, oh well, he cares enough about this to put some money into it.
There you
go. You know what I mean?
That's a good way to look at it.
So I think
to
it does,
justify it.
I think it is a good, definitely a good thing to have, and yours is great. So people will go check out Milk River, streaming everywhere and on your website and. Yeah. So do you have any shows like coming up? Do you have booked?
We don't have any shows booked right now.
Thinking about it for January.
Yeah. We're going to hit hopefully the early of the year. Yeah. We did last October or last month, we did something at Rogers State University, which was the latest thing. They have a TV show and we were able to do that, which was really neat. We recorded it back in May and then it was released month. So
check it out.
Yeah.
So.
Other than just, you know, picking up acoustic shows every now and then, nothing scheduled right now with the band.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Luke. This has been great and it's great talking to you. And the album's really cool. I don't know if I told you, I loved it. I thought it was not necessarily the style that I go to. I think it's great as far as very well done. Sounds great. I the one thing I should have said this earlier, but very Tom Petty vibes for me. I don't know. Maybe that's just because I love Tom Petty.
Like,
but it definitely felt like that. That kind of style. So yeah. All right. Well, thanks for everything.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you soon. And thanks everyone for watching. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
That was fun.